Good afternoon, Council. Ready to proceed?
Good afternoon. May it please the Court. My name is Nicole Walker, and I represent the appellant, Mr. Jerome Cephas. We're here today for essentially one reason, and that is Mr. Cephas' motion for judgment of acquittal was denied, and this allowed him to have his conduct, essentially of assault third, to be elevated to a felony based solely on the fact that McKeva Rogers falsely believed that she was pregnant at the time.
When Mr. Radulski was the trial attorney, was he a public defender, a contract attorney, or privately retained?
Public defender, Your Honor. Did the court need to hear the facts, or is it sufficient?
We know the facts.
Okay.
Fair to say.
The state relied primarily on Dr. Barlow to establish that Ms. Rogers was pregnant. However, Dr. Barlow testified that what Ms. Rogers had, what her condition was that of a hydatidiform mole. Now, the doctor wasn't able to define for the jury the term pregnant, and she didn't give a complete definition for a mole, but she did describe Ms. Rogers' condition. And she stated that in response to Mr. Radulski, she indicated that she did in fact have a disease. It was a gestational tophoblastic disease. And what it really was swollen placenta that had overtaken her uterus. And in fact, from day one, there was never a chance of her having a child. There was never a fetus. There was never any fetal tissue and never an embryo. Her description clearly does fit into the definition of what medical community has found to be a mole, and under medical authority, it has been defined as a fleshy mass or tumor that forms in the uterus due to abnormal post-fertilization of the ovum.
Well, is the medical definition of pregnancy even relevant here?
Well, I do believe it is of the pregnancy itself, because the state was required in this case to establish that she was pregnant.
On whose terms? The ordinary dictionary definition or some medical definition?
I see the point.
As I remember, the question was phrased in the medical world.
Yes.
Well, trials are not in the medical
right.
world. They're in the real world.
That's correct, Your Honor. And that was the way it was questioned, but assuming that question wasn't even asked, she never provided any term of definition of pregnant. And Mr. Donovan's correct in his brief, as the court, I think, is going, that the commonly accepted term is what is to be used in this case, since it's not in the code. And I think most reasonable people would agree that being pregnant means with child or expecting to have a baby, which comes from a developing fetus.
Or at least that possibility.
Correct.
So in this case, her testimony was there was no fetal tissue. Is that correct?
That's correct. From day one. There was never and she testified to that, there was never a possibility that she would give birth to a child, that she never had fetal tissue. And she said that at least six occasions. And
well, what's the significance from the legislature's point of view of enhancing the penalty for this assault when someone is pregnant? What's the public policy? Is it to prevent people from assaulting someone who they may believe to be pregnant or would have reason to believe be pregnant? Or is it proof beyond a reasonable doubt that after the fact they either were or were not in fact pregnant?
I think the second is correct, that they were in fact pregnant. And I say that because of the context in which 612A9 was enacted. The Chelsea Marie Sharon Act actually created this subsection and also created two other statutes. Now, I was not able to find any written legislative intent, but I think it speaks for itself. The Act actually created the statutes abuse of a pregnant female. And in those two statutes, they are felonies, and they elevate assault third to these felonies based on some type of termination or threat to the pregnancy. So, for example, abuse of a pregnant female in the first degree elevates assault third if there is an intentional unlawful termination of the pregnancy. So the pregnancy is the target of that crime. And then, of course, abuse of a pregnant female, second degree, is a reckless termination. So that's a lower level of threat to the fetus. The next statute they enacted was this portion of the assault second degree statute, which was assault on a pregnant woman. that can logically be read as a lower, lesser included offense of the abuse second, which is a lesser included of the abuse first. So it's designed to attack a lower level threat to the pregnancy itself.
But consistent with what you have just said, the statute also says you're guilty of this type of assault even if you didn't know the person was pregnant.
Correct.
So after the fact, if you find out the person was pregnant, that is what makes it a higher degree of assault.
Correct. The defendant's subjective belief is irrelevant, and the statute has made it so. That is correct. So they are. So it's a strict liability statute in that sense.
I asked you whether Mr. Radulski was a public defender, because it does seem puzzling that there was no expert witness for the defense. Is there a logical explanation for that? I mean, is the public defender out of money for defense experts, or why didn't the defense have an expert?
My understanding from Mr. Radulski is that he was informed that no doctor would be testifying, and it was that day that he had been informed that she would be testifying. And at that point, it was a little late in the game, obviously, for him to get a continuance. He did consult with individuals in our office that provided him with some sources, which he attempted to use to cross-examine the doctor, and he was not permitted to do so. So I think without having been there and without being Mr. Radulski, I think my understanding is he felt as he was had been pushed into a box in that case.
Why was it too late today to get a continuance if the state, if your facts are correct, that the state at the last minute calls an expert witness, and the expert witness is going to give an opinion that arguably at least is directly related to an element of the offense that the state has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt? Why wouldn't the continuance be virtually automatic as a result of surprise?
Well, Your Honor, from reviewing the record, it does not appear that he specifically requested one. And the reason I made that statement is based on, and I guess it would be my interpretation of the conversations that did occur between the court and Mr. Radulski. And I might add that what we're talking about here is the state's prima facie case. He was not required at that point to put on the expert. In fact,
our question is, what was the defense?
I mean, the defense was...
We can't fathom what was going on in the trial. You show up for court.
Right.
You know the state has to prove she was pregnant, and you must think they're going to do that somehow. And then you have no expert of your own, and you get some treatises off the shelf and try to cross-examine the expert. But what was the defense plan? Reconstruct it for us.
From my understanding, again, is that Mr. Radulski was under the impression that the state was going to use Ms. Rogers' testimony to establish that she was pregnant. That's my best understanding from what I've been told. And then he was, and in fact, I think he has relayed to me that he was told specifically that they were not going to call an expert.
And then the defense would be to ask her, is it true that you knew you would never be able to
correct.
Have a child? She would say, yes, that was my understanding.
That's correct.
And then he would argue, well, then she
correct.
Wasn't pregnant.
Yes, because, in fact, her testimony was, it was her understanding, it was a massive cancerous tissue that she had. And it is, that was the defense going in, and it was the defense coming out, was that she was not pregnant. And just with the state's case put on before the defense got to his case and an opportunity to put on an expert, the state failed to establish that she was pregnant. And I say that because the doctor described the condition that Ms. Rogers had as being that identical to a mole, and everybody agreed she had a mole. She never described anything to show that it is consistent with being with child. If we use the common accepted definition of pregnant, there's not one piece of her testimony that demonstrates something consistent with that.
Did the defense counsel proffer an instruction to the court that would have defined the word pregnant?
No, Your Honor. It did not.
Even so much as to cite a common Webster Collegiate Dictionary definition of pregnancy?
No, Your Honor. I think that the... I can't go inside their minds, but I would think that under certain circumstances, the commonly accepted definition would have been what was anticipated, that she's with child. And I think that's the argument he made. It was consistent with that. hoping that the jury would be able to understand the commonly accepted definition. Unfortunately,
but if you look at the record in this case, and the instructions to the jury say you can convict him if you find she was pregnant.
Correct.
But then the court never defines pregnant.
That's correct.
And what you're telling us is there was no request to have pregnant defined.
My recollection is there was not. That's correct.
And do you think there's a difference between pregnancy and pregnant?
Well, I think...
I ask that because on redirect, after Mr. Radulski appeared to be somewhat effective, and the state comes back and says, doctor, in your opinion, was this a pregnancy?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so is there a distinction between a medically defined pregnancy and being pregnant under the statute?
Your Honor, I don't think so. I don't think it's contained in the code, either one. I do think that there is, I did not identify a distinction between the two. I think that the understanding was that she used the term pregnancy on a couple of occasions, the doctor did, and she said she believed her to be, for that to have been a pregnancy. But she did never, there was nothing consistent with that, is I guess the point I'm trying to make. She says this banana is an apple, but she never, you know, she described a banana. She never described this apple. And I think that's where the state's own evidence undercuts. You know, she may have said off the cuff that she was pregnant, but then she described it, and she described something totally different than a pregnancy. And I think that that is what the concern is that, you know, to have someone say something and then to put all their evidence on that is directly inconsistent with that cannot be sufficient. And the state, I think, in its position, seemed to offer up to the court that a subjective belief by the victim would have been sufficient under the circumstances. And I think that goes back to Chief Justice Steele's point in that if the victim believed she was pregnant at the time because she had been told that, that that would be sufficient to achieve the legislature's intent. And there's nothing to back up that hypothesis that was offered up to the court and is, in fact, contradictory to this court's prior considerations of cases such as Word and Walton, where this court addressed robbery first and a victim's subjective belief, and sort of a looking down upon a victim's subjective belief actually elevating an offense. And I think where this becomes problematic, if we allow this victim's subjective belief to control, this opens up a whole can of worms. For example...
Well, but before we get to that, you're asking us to reverse this. Let's focus on the record basis.
Okay.
For a reversal. And because if you look at the record, Mr. Radulski wasn't able to get the doctor to respond to any of the treatises.
Right.
He never offered a definition in his own case of pregnant. And the doctor said this was a pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the record of the state's case, you have a person qualified as an expert witness who said this was a pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
How does the judge deny that motion? What should the judge have ruled to properly deny the motion?
Well, the fact that she said it was a pregnancy does not, this goes back to what you were saying before, whether pregnancy is the same. It does not fit into, I don't know how to explain it. The fact that the state...
Now, my question is, what does the trial judge say in her ruling? You want the trial judge to say, I'm granting the motion for a directed verdict,
mm-hmm.
because although the state's expert has been qualified and although the state's expert has said this is a pregnancy, the expert also hasn't been able to define pregnancy. The expert has also said there was no fetal tissue, and the expert has also said that there would never be a live birth under any circumstance.
Right.
Therefore, I conclude as a matter of law, notwithstanding this medical testimony that it's
mm-hmm.
a pregnancy, she was not pregnant. Is that what the judge should have said?
Yes, Your Honor. Excuse me. And I think the reasoning for that would be the fact that the doctor's own testimony, along with Ms. Rogers, completely contradicting that one statement by her, I believe this is a pregnancy, but then she, you know, I believe this is an apple, but then she describes a banana. She does not, she says, but here's what she had, and she completely undercuts. She never once, if we take the commonly accepted meaning of pregnant, she never once in there said she was with child or she was going to have a baby. In fact, she said just the opposite. There was never a chance this was going
to
happen.
So it really boils down to where we were earlier, and that is there is a difference between a pregnant female and a pregnancy in the medical world. But the evidence that the trial judge had before at the time of the motion was sufficient evidence to go to the jury. And the ultimate question, isn't it, is was the jury properly instructed on the definition of pregnant female, which is the wording of the statute?
I don't
and in the absence of a request for a dictionary definition that says a pregnant female means a woman who is with child, biblical, collegiate dictionary, and everything in between, mm-hmm. in the absence of that instruction to the jury, what else is the jury left with?
The jury is left with, as the state even indicated in its brief, the commonly accepted meaning. So if there's no definition given to the jury, which, granted, it would have been a much better thing to do, but if one's not given to them, then they are to follow. It's accepted that it's the commonly accepted meaning of the term pregnant with child. That's not the evidence that was presented by the state. And, yes, Mr. Rudelski may have done a better job with his own case, but we're talking about the state's case in the testimony that was provided. The doctor on one occasion says, glossing over, this is considered a pregnancy. Well, there's false pregnancies. Just because you say the word pregnancy does not make it a pregnancy. False pregnancy is not a pregnancy. So what that has to do with this mole, this fleshy mass that she had, that she described, makes it not a pregnancy. So the state's own evidence was overwhelming against the one statement that she made saying, yes, I consider this to be a pregnancy, because she had no evidence was presented. In fact, she presented the opposite to support that statement.
You want to reserve the rest of your time?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor.
Okay.
Police the court. My colleague says that subjective belief is not enough, and certainly I agree with that. If a woman, where we're not focusing entirely on the woman's belief at this point. Now, I make the point in my brief that under this statute, the focus is on the woman rather than on the fetus embryo in the abuse of pregnant female, because under those statutes, the assault has to end in the termination of the pregnancy. Well, in this statute, under 612, the assault does not have to end with the termination of a pregnancy. And there's no indication, by the way, in this case, that even though the pregnancy, again, I know I'm using a term we're arguing about, but even though the condition, I'll use a neutral term, even though the condition was ended after the assault, it was not as a result of the assault directly. It was simply that when she was taken to the hospital following the assault, they found out that what was inside her womb was this, I'm not going to try to pronounce that word, but was not a fetus.
And well, it was how can you be pregnant if your condition from day one would never have resulted in a live birth under any circumstances?
Well, I realize that Ms. Walker did say from day one. I don't think there's anything on the record. This began as a pregnancy because it began with fertilized ovum.
Well, your expert, the state's expert, said there was no fetal tissue
at that four-month stage, which is where she was. By this time, whatever had been in there had been devoured by this placenta gone wild, basically. The problem is, when exactly this pregnancy went bad. Nobody knows. It went bad at some point. It may have been an hour after conception. It may have been a week after conception. It may have been a month after conception. Nobody really knows. All we know is that...
Are you suggesting that the facts are consistent that at some point she was, in fact, pregnant?
Yes. This condition cannot develop outside a conception.
Would you refer us to the record on that?
Yes. Certainly. It has to begin with conception. A12, page 78, where she's telling us molar pregnancy, this is Dr. Barlow, is an abnormal type of pregnancy, involves an abnormal sound, basically the finger can go a little crazy, complete mole, the entire pregnancy wasn't normal thing. No fetal tissue involved. When she tested pregnant, she has positive pregnancy tests. Test 12-week stage, feel pregnant, and it begins with, I don't know if she was that, well, actually.
Well, I can't understand you, but I can read the
appendix
later.
That's why I'm, it's a,
I thought the record was there was never a conception.
I'm sorry?
I thought the record reflected there was never a conception.
No, it did not. The molar pregnancy does begin with conception, and then something goes wrong. I'm absolutely certain of that. It's not a cyst. It's not an ovarian cyst. It's not something that happens. It's not a cancerous tumor. It begins with conception.
Well, at the time of the assault, are we agreed that she was or was not a pregnant female?
She was not carrying anything that was going to develop into a child. There was nothing left there but the placenta.
So what we have is that in the medical world, her condition would be termed a pregnancy.
Yes. Placenta began with conception, and it will end when the products of conception, to use the medical terminology, whatever those products are evacuated from the womb. Now, that could be with a live birth, and it could be something else, but I think it's probably common knowledge that most conceptions do not end with a live birth. They end with a miscarriage or some other way. The problem with the defendant's, I suppose, argument here...
Well, before we get to the problem with the defendant's argument, you agree that the trial judge did not tell the jury what the term pregnant or female pregnant...
No, left that up to the jury... Left that up to the jury to decide, using their common knowledge, which now, since the term is not defined in the criminal code, it's the commonly accepted term, the commonly accepted meaning. The jury here decided that, based on the testimony, she was, in their view, pregnant at the time, even though there was absolutely no possibility that she was going to give birth to a live child. Now, Dr. Barlow calls it a molar pregnancy and was of the opinion that the victim was pregnant at the time.
Well, if the doctor had said it's a false pregnancy.
Well, then there wouldn't have been any pregnancy. It would have been a...
In the medical world, it was a false pregnancy.
But it would under not... Yes.
Under the same theory as in the medical world... It's a molar pregnancy. Tell me the difference.
Well, first of all, I don't know that false pregnancy is a medical term. That's a common term.
Well, I put it as a hypothetical.
How
does a jury use their common sense to sort out from either of those two alternatives what constitutes a pregnant female, as the statute uses the term?
Well, I would say that a pregnancy, again, commonly begins with with conception. That would be the only difference. A false pregnancy, there's no conception.
So if the record doesn't reflect that there was a conception, then your argument fails?
I would assume so. If a molar pregnancy does not begin with conception, if it's something else, if it's a cyst or it's a tumor, then it's not a pregnancy. But a fair reading of the doctor's testimony is that this begins with conception and then something goes terribly wrong. Definitely, if this did not begin with conception, then I shouldn't be here. I mean, this shouldn't have been charged as she was not pregnant. Simply because she has a growth that happens to be in the womb doesn't mean that she's pregnant.
When she was charged, did the state have the information that they had from this doctor when the doctor was called to testify?
I would assume so. Otherwise, we wouldn't have charged this. I mean, I did talk to Marsha White about this, but my focus was not necessarily on, I just talked to her about the pregnancy. It was not on.
So if this information from the doctor who was called was available at the time that the state charged the defendant, was it not disclosed in response to Rule 16, or was it not disclosed as potentially exculpatory evidence?
Yeah, well, what Ms. Walker said today about Mr. Rudelski being somehow surprised is news to me. Like I say, I talked to Ms. White, but I knew nothing about that, and I did not talk to her about when it was disclosed or any Rule 16 discovery. So I really can't say. I mean, I would be very surprised that Dr. Barlow was called at the last minute as an expert witness, and if she were, and Mr. Rudelski was surprised by this, I have no idea why he didn't ask for a continuance. But, again, like Ms. Walker, I wasn't there, and even though I talked to Ms. White about the case, my focus wasn't on that. I was talking to her about other things and her ideas about, basically, pregnancy.
So I want to make sure I understand your position in this appeal. As I understand it, if the record reflects that the expert witness never talked about a conception in this case, you agree there was no pregnancy.
If there was, yes, if, now, I don't, you know, again, I cannot say here, I thought it was where I was looking, but it was not. If she was never asked whether there was a conception, precisely, but yet from other testimony, it is clear that there was a conception and that a molar pregnancy depends on a conception, then my argument would be that there was a pregnancy.
Well, you know, it's hard to understand your argument, because it's one thing to tell us you're sure there's testimony about conception in the record, but you can't find it while you're standing at the podium. That's totally understandable. But now there seems to be a suggestion that there might not even be testimony about conception in the record.
Well, I'm saying, I suppose, is that if Dr. Barlow was not asked the direct question, did this begin with conception, nevertheless, from her testimony, it is clear that this molar pregnancy or any molar pregnancy must begin with conception, or this simply is not going to happen. I mean, just scientifically, it cannot happen on its own. It's not, again, a growth. It's not an ovarian cyst, for example, which happens with an unfertilized egg, goes crazy. This has to begin with conception. And again, I repeat, if there was no conception, there was no pregnancy.
So if that turns out to be the record, I assume you would make a motion to remand this case to the Superior Court so that you could nolly-pross the conviction. Is that correct?
Well, I haven't thought that far ahead. There was still an assault. If the court finds that the state failed to prove in this case that there was a pregnancy, the assault second conviction has to be reversed. But the assault... And, of course, it cannot be retried because it's a sufficiency of the evidence problem. But the assault third conviction would stand, I would assume. The court has no further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If I just may briefly address the evidence, whether or not there was any as to conception, I would submit that there was not. With respect to Ms. Rogers' testimony, no one ever discussed their, you know, there was no testimony with respect to her actually engaging in activity that would lead to conception. She, A6 in the appendix is where she started being questioned about this issue, and they picked right up with her feeling pregnant. The doctor... Her first testimony begins with a description of the molar pregnancy and, again, did not testify per se that there was a conception. I also just wanted to make sure there's something clear on the record with respect to Mr. Rudelski's surprise. I don't want to lead the court to believe that he didn't know that there was evidence in this case. I'm sure he did receive the discovery. On A13 is where, page 84 there, is where Mr. Radulski says he's questioning the witness, and he says, I found out this morning we are going to have this witness. And that's the only point I was making, was that he was not aware that that witness was going to be testifying. Did not mean to insinuate that he didn't know that there was evidence that was, would be presented or attempted to be presented that this woman may or may not be pregnant.
Well, is there anything in the record that suggests that he knew that this evidence that would be presented, A, by a medical professional, and B, that it would be arguably equivocal?
There's no evidence in the record indicating one way or the other. From my understanding, it was he believed the evidence was going to come in solely through Ms. Rogers, meaning the records then would not be addressed. It would just be her testimony.
Well, was the Rule 16 discovery that was filed in this case discovery that asked the state to disclose any expert testimony that would be offered at trial?
I would imagine that it was. And the next question would be, I did not review to see what the response was to that. I certainly can do that if the court wishes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and adjourn.